All right, good evening. Welcome to our second of three, preparing for Kabbalah Satara Shirim in the writings of Rav Dessler. Tonight we're going to talk about how to turn Matan Torah into Kabbalah Satara. And if you're thinking those sound kind of similar, well then stay tuned. Sometimes we refer to this time as Zman Matan Torah Seinu. That sounds familiar to us. And other times we call it that this is Kabbalah Satara, Kabbalah Satara. Are these different terms? Do they mean different things? Dasher has a beautiful essay where he describes the giving and the taking of Torah. If you want sources, they're on the table over there in the back. And we're going to share the screen so we have sources for our Zoom friends as well. And to better understand how to prepare for Kabbalah Satorah by turning Zman Matan Torah Seinu into Zman Kabbalah Satorah. So we're going to have two essays tonight. One essay comes from Volume 1 of Michtav Me'Eliyahu, and the second essay comes from Volume 2 of Michtav Me'Eliyahu. Rav Dessler starts out with a very beautiful, poignant idea about the calendar, about understanding the ways in which we relate to the times of the year. Rav Dessler says, Zman Matan Torah Seinu. We're familiar with this phrase in benching and in davening on Shavuos. And he quotes from one of his Rebbeim, Ki ein hazman over aleinu, ela anu holchem b'socho. People always use the expression like, oh, can't believe it's already almost Pesach. Okay, I didn't mean to scare anybody. It's not really almost Pesach, but I guess it kind of sounds like it's already almost Pesach. Right? Oh, Pesach is coming up. Pesach isn't coming up. Pesach is not upon us. Shavuos is not upon us. The holidays of the year, time, does not come upon us. We travel through it. What does that mean? L'masha, on the second line of the first page. Kol ha-shabbosos hein shabbosachas. Shabbos is Shabbos. Whether it's this week's parasha or next week's parasha, Shabbos is Shabbos. The kedusha of Shabbos is the same from week to week. Shabbos is a fixed constant. Ela anu holchem be'igul ha-shavui u'magi'im shuv ela Shabbos. Shabbos is not coming close. Yes, Uncle Moshe said Shabbos is coming. Fine. But the reality is Shabbos isn't coming. Shabbos is what it is. Shabbos is a gift. Shabbos is the Kedusha of time. And we approach Shabbos, we move toward it. In other words, it's not that we are making something up or that we are superimposing upon ourselves the Kabbalah of Shabbos. It's that Shabbos is what it is, and it's a reality that comes week to week. And the same thing is true about the Yomim Tovim. Kein kol chag ha-shavuos echadu. Just like one Shabbos to the next, not a different experience, it's the same store almost that we're visiting. It's the same experience that we're opening the door and walking inside. This Shabbos, the next Shabbos, the next Shabbos. And the same thing is true every year for Shavuos. Umidi igol hiluchenu sha'anu korim lo shana. We experience a year by revisiting Shavuos once a year. Anu shavim levo el zman matan toraseinu. We revisit that door, that store, that experience of the time of the giving of the Torah. Oso hazman shebohu koach matan Torah. This is very, very important. It's not that we are commemorating Kabbalah Satorah. Kabbalah Satorah is a historical event. And that we, many years later, are remembering what once was. Because we don't say that for Shabbos. There was once a Shabbos many, 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 many thousands of years ago during creation. And every week, we commemorate Shabbos. We don't commemorate Shabbos. We are experiencing the same Shabbos every single week from Shabbos Bereishis. Shavuos is the same thing where it's underlined. Oh, so Zman Mamish. This year, Shavuos, is exactly the same experience that it was in the year 2448 at Matan Torah. Lo kamo shenachshov shehu rak mazkeres yom Matan Torah. It's a zikaron, it is a commemoration, or a celebration, or a zecher or something. It's not what it is. It's the same thing. The same experience that was thousands of years ago continues to be in existence every single year. And what we're going through right now in preparing for Kabbalah Satorah is the exact same thing that Bnei Yisrael did as they prepared for the very first Zman Matan Torah Seinu. V'anu shuv mekablim bo mamash es haTorah im nishtadol bazeh. If we can replicate the same efforts that were done in that time, and we can do it ourselves as well, then we are going to be able to mekabel the Torah exactly as it was done then. We're not just commemorating when they once were mekabel the Torah. Every year the same thing comes around. I think the Maharal describes this as like a spiral staircase. A spiral staircase is circular. So you're constantly revisiting the same point. If you have a bird's eye view of the spiral staircase, you are constantly coming across the same parts of the circle again and again. The difference is, hopefully, that you're elevating yourself every time you circle back to the next Pesach, to the next Shavuos, to the next Shavuos, to the next Pesach, to the next Shavuos. Each time it's on a higher level. You're revisiting the year. It's the same experience, but this time, hopefully on a higher madriga, hopefully with a greater appreciation, a greater ability to connect. This idea about the Jewish calendar is very, very important for every Yantiv. When you think about Rosh Hashanah, what is Rosh Hashanah, well, the word is not commemorate, but what is Rosh Hashanah significant of? Why is that an important time for judgment? What happened a long time ago on Rosh Hashanah?
The world was created.
The world, but more specifically, Chazal say man was created, right? Adam was created on Rosh Hashanah.
But for the machlokas that it could be.
It could have been, right? Tosfos try to reconcile the machlokas, whether the world was created in Tishrei or Nisan, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had thoughts of creating it in Nisan and actually created it in Tishrei. Either way, that Aleph Tishrei represents the creation of mankind. And so every year on Aleph Tishrei, we are reborn, we are rejudged, we are going through that process of having our lives evaluated by the Creator. Not that we are remembering what once was. It's the same time period. We're revisiting the same kochos, the same forces that were in existence in the year zero, I guess year one, are the same exact forces we're experiencing now. What happened in Yom Kippur a long, long time ago? Yom Kippur was when we got
the second
luchos and the forgiveness for Chedah Egel. Yom Kippur is a time for forgiveness. We're not just remembering a time of forgiveness. This is the same time of forgiveness. Sukkot represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha, providing for us for rain. That's the same as it always was. Pesach is Manche Rusenu. It's not just a matter of remembering a time when we once were free. It's now a time of Cheres on Pesach. And the same thing is true for Shavuos. Same thing is for Shavuos. And we said last week, we quoted the Or HaChaim HaKadosh in Parshas Emor, that Sfiras HaOmer was a time of Zayin Nekiyim. It was the national version of preparing ourselves for Kabbalah HaTorah. And the Or HaChaim made sure to point out, it wasn't a one-time thing. It's the same fixture in the time of year that all of us pass through every single year. We are passing through that same door, that same opportunity that was then. It's the same thing, just like Shabbos to Shabbos is the same Shabbos. No later Shabbos is just a memory of the previous Shabbos. Every Shabbos is another Shabbos. Every Shavuos is another Zman Matan Torah Seinu. So what are the opportunities here? What are the opportunities for us, knowing that this is not just a Zikaron or a Mazkeres? This is actually Zman Matan Torah Seinu now. So what's happening now? In the next paragraph, Zman Matan Torah Seinu. Kishe'ei nosnim i'efshe lakacha. If no one's giving, then you obviously can't receive. So there has to be a time of the giving of the Torah. Kishe'ein chanut i'efshe laknos. If there's no store, there's no supply, then there can't be any purchasing. The gam kishe'eish chanus. But even if there is a store, even if there is supply, even if there is a person willing to give or to sell, the customer has to have means with which to buy it. And even if the customer has money, but the customer doesn't have the transportation to arrive at the store, they're not going to get the goods either. And even if you have the money and you have the means, you have to do the actual act of purchase. We have to arrive. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us the Torah. Not he once did. He is every year at this time giving us the Torah. So he's giving. The store is open. We have to go to the store. We have to spend the time in the Beis Medrash. Ulashalim ba'amal rav. We have to pay. How do we pay? We pay with our time, with our investment, with our effort, with our opening a sefer. No one ever became a Talmud Chacham without opening up a sefer, without investing the time. Ulakabel el halev. And we have to actually internalize the messages of the Torah. Ubeloza hu kedivrei ben po'ira ha-tzduki li'ana ha-melech. He quotes from the Gemara in Kedushin the following expression, Harei Torah karucha munachas bekeren zevis. The Torah is sitting there all packaged, ready to go. Harotza lomod yavo v'ilomod. Whoever wants to come, come and get it. The Torah is there. The Torah is ready. Avo mihu harotzeh. But who is that? Who is that? Who is that who wants to come take it? This is not just a theoretical question of what happened a long time ago. As we are now approaching Zman Matan Torah Seinu, we have to ask, the Torah is forgiving. Matan Torah is there, and that's fixed into nature. The question is, can we turn Matan Torah into Kabbalah HaTorah? What's it going to take for us? What's going to allow us to actually complete the purchase? To show up, to have the means to pay, and to be able to receive and walk out with something. How are we going to just not leave the giving in the giving stage and just say, it was for sale, we didn't take it? He quotes in the next paragraph a comment to the Maharal, where it's underlined at the end of the next paragraph. Ramchal writes, "The oro shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu ein bo hagbala. The light of Hashem and His Torah has no bounds. Ela hagbala hi rak b'makabel. The reason why sometimes we have trouble receiving Hashem's Kedusha, or experiencing Hashem's Kedusha, is not because Chas V'Shalom there's something lacking in HaKadosh Baruch Hu or the way that He's giving the Torah. The only thing missing is us. Shechalon osav mushcharim b'refes v'tit ad she'ein ha'or nechnas. Sometimes the light can be blazing outside, but the windows of the building are covered in grime, are covered in garbage, and so no light seeps in. There's nothing wrong with the light, but the ability of the receptacle to receive the light, the ability of the person inside the house to experience the light, is closed off. Because the Matan Torah is there, the giving of the light is there, it's shining and it's blazing, but the worthiness and the receptibility, is that a word? And the ability to receive might be clouded by a person's bad midos, by a person's distractions, by a person's unwillingness or disinterest in receiving the Torah. If that's the case, then the giver is trying to give, but the receiver is not there. It's kind of like, we had this just yesterday. We came back home and there were a bunch of stickies on our door that they tried to deliver a package to us, but they couldn't because no one was home. Which is very confusing because every day our doorstep is covered in thousands of packages. So usually they figure out we can just leave it here. I'm not sure what they were delivering. Anyone sent us a zillion dollars. Thank you very much. But they insisted on, if no one's going to receive it, then we're going to bring it back to sender. There are certain things that are so precious that if someone is not willing to accept it, and the giver doesn't give it, what good is the giving if there's no one to take it, if there's no one to receive it? Which he writes on the next page, on page 104, page 2 of our booklet. He writes in the second paragraph, "Ya'achar kol eila," despite HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blinding light on all the goodness of the Torah and Hashchina and the ability for us to see Hashem. If it's now, as Man Matan Torah Seinu, that was the time when B'nai Yisrael saw Hashem, experienced Hashem. We have that opportunity too. So what's missing? Tzarech chi kavlena ba'atza, we each have to work on receiving it. Perish la'orer libo u'lahachnes as ha'Torah l'soch libo. We have to work on inspiring ourselves and to actually internalize the Torah and its messages. Dim lav hachi havei nesina b'li kabbalah. It's a delivery without a recipient. V'hu lo ki'ilu lo nitna. The Torah can't be given if there's no one to take it. Da'alko panam einana etzlo. If no one's actually able to receive it, then it's almost like it wasn't given. Harei ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu nosin ha'Torah l'chol echad v'yachad mamish. HaKadosh Baruch Hu now, every year, is handing it out to us. The Torah is there, a package to go. Anyone can come and receive it. V'al yedei timtum ha'lev anu machzirin osa lo chas v'shalom. We're almost returning back to sender. Sorry, no one's home. Sorry, we're closed. Sorry, we're covered in grime. We don't want this light. Ki'ilu namar lo chafatzi lekachta. It's almost like we're telling Hashem, not interested. I'm not interested in taking this gift of yours. But they said, no, thank you for Torah. So that could be us. Oh my gosh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to the other nations, and they weren't interested. We were interested. But that's not just a one-time question. Every year we have to say, do you want this gift of mine? Are we going to say no thank you? Or are we going to say Nasa V'Nishma? Uv'yadayim nevar mi'atzmeinu matan Torah, chas v'shalom. We have the unfortunate, terrible curse of being able to reject matan Torah. The matan Torah is the same. The giving is happening. The question is it going to be only a matan Torah? Or will it be a Kabbalah Torah? Are we going to be able to internalize it? Are we going to be able to bring it in? Now, the Kotzker Rebbe had many, many sharp quotes. One of his quotes was, I'm not sure how old he was when someone asked him this, but they said, where is Hashem? Most people want to ask a kid, you know what Hashem is, where is Hashem? And the Kotzker Rebbe said, where is Hashem? Hashem is wherever you allow him in. On HaKadosh Baruch Hu's end, he's everywhere. There's no lacking, there's no hagbala, as the Ramchal said. There's no limit to where Hashem could be. But from our perspective, Hashem could be kept out if we're not willing to open our hearts. We're not willing to open the door. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not dependent on us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us. We and all of creation are dependent. Our existence is dependent on Him. Ein od mulvado. That being said, from our perspective, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only exists to us in as far as we're willing to acknowledge Him. The more we acknowledge Him, the more He exists to us. In that sense, Anochi Hashem Elokecha is counted as a tzivui. It's counted as a command. Why is it a command? Statement of fact. I am the Lord thy God who took thou out of Egypt. So why is it a command? Either you believe or you don't believe. The answer is, it's not yes or no. We can believe more and more. We can let Hashem into more places in our heart. To be specific, we can let Hashem into more places in our life. Is the Kadosh Baruch Hu with us in the car when we're driving in traffic and really angry? Is the Kadosh Baruch Hu there with us at business, at our place of business when we're tempted to overlook something and be dishonest? Is he with us in our relations with our family when we're tempted to scream because it's behind closed doors and no one else will know if we're a jerk to our loved ones? In what areas are we letting Hashem in? We only acknowledge Him when we're learning, when we're davening. Halavai, we should notice Hashem when we're davening. That would be great. The question is, where are we going to let Hashem in? The light is blinding. Living a Torah lifestyle that governs how we do business, how we speak, how we deal with each other. A Torah lifestyle. The Kabbalah Satorah is there for however much we're willing to take it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will permeate the areas of our lives that we let Him into. Many have pointed out that the Aseret HaDibros, they parallel each other. There's 1 and 6 and 2 and 7 and 3 and 8 and 4 and 9 and 5 and 10. And if you look at the first on the right side and the first on the left side, on the right side we have Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, believing Hashem's existence. And on the other side, we cheat. Any blue clothes here? What's number 6? Lo Tirtzach, do not kill. What's the connection between believing in Hashem and thou shalt not kill? So the most common explanation is that what the right side is for Bin Adam Lamakum, the left side is Bin Adam Lachavera. If you think about Lo Tirtzach, it's the way to get rid of someone. I'm not recommending this. In fact, it's actually Usher. Lo Tirtzach, thou shalt not kill. Right? But that's the way with each other that we can get someone to stop existing. Torah says, don't make your fellow man stop existing. On the right side, believe in Hashem. Because Chas V'Shalom, Kiviyachol, it's almost that when a person doesn't believe in Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't exist in that person's mind. Again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not dependent on us. We don't actually affect His objective existence. He is the only one who has an objective existence. That's true. But from the perspective of the person who's not believing, they are not living with Hashem in their lives. They have, quote-unquote, killed the recognition and the awareness of Hashem. They parallel. Do not make your friend disappear. Do not make Hashem disappear. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can disappear from our perspective if we don't open up our hearts. The Matan Torah is the one thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. The question is, are we going to let Him in? This is the question we have to think about. How are we going to use the Shavuos as a chance to think of more ways to live our lives in a Torah way, to bring the Torah into more places in our hearts? I'm going to pause here for a second. Any thoughts about this?
I'm more intrigued by the crossover between the two. I'm just trying to think about what the other principles
are. All the other ways
to... Which is not the purpose of your shiur. I'm trying to figure out how Losach mode and Kaveh is going
to be able to work. So many things to say for another shiur.
Yes.
But how all five sense parallel. Other thoughts?
Gemara and Shabbat of Kaf Alehem Par Kigigit.
Good, beautiful. That's where we're going next. Very good. Thank you very much for that beautiful segue. Right? And this is the question that Rav Dessler is actually able to answer very nicely. There is the Gemara in Shabbos. Yilan, thank you for that beautiful segue. The Gemara says that at the time of Kabbalah Satorah, Hashem held the mountain over their heads like a barrel. Kaf aleim har kegigas, hayichan sham Yisrael neged ahar. Pasuk describes that they stood betachtis ahar. Tachtis ahar, in simple language, means they stood at the foot of the mountain. But the Gemara in Shabbos says, "V'tachtes ahar," they stood under the mountain. Kaf aleim har kegigas. Hashem says, "If you accept the Torah, mutav, and if not, sham tehek v'raskem." That's going to be the end of you. And Tosos asked the obvious question: that was Kabbalah Satorah. What happened to Nasa v'Nishma? That's the start of Kabbalah Satorah. The mountain held over their heads, being forced. What happened to Kabbalah Satorah? What happened to Nasa v'Nishma? How can they both be true? Were we forced to take the Torah? So Chazal say at Purim we took it back again. But the question is, but during Parshas Yisro, during Parshas Mishpatim, when we have Nasa v'Nishma, what does the mountain being over our heads have to do with anything if in reality we took it willingly, Nasa v'Nishma? How do we explain that? Let's go to the second essay. This is going jumping to page 4, all the way to the end, in volume 2. That's a question we're going to have to address with the second essay. Okay? This is page 39 of volume 2 of Mechtav Me'Eliyahu. Understand Matan and Kabbalah. So the bottom of the page, get our Kabbalah Satorah. What does it mean to have Kabbalah Satorah? Umikan, he writes, Kabbalah Satorah Perusha Kabbalah Belev. Kabbalah Satorah means, we said before in the first essay, to allow it to permeate our hearts, to accept it. The giving isn't enough. We have to believe it. We have to make it real. The lobe of chinas yediyah sichlit. Oh, his overus rigshit bovad. Being makabel the Torah does not mean an intellectual, philosophical belief that it happened, or a philosophical agreement that this is a holy book, or a momentary inspiration that we want to be inspired. What does it mean to have Kabbalah Satorah? Elasha tisyashev belev ha'adam achanases mitzios bo bekovas es madrigaso. It's to believe in its existence like it's real. To live with the reality of the Torah. Where it's underlined. Ikar kabbalas ha'Torah ve'erka eitzel ha'adam einam el lefi beirur ve'emus hasagosav. Kabbalas ha'Torah means for a person to live with the reality of the Torah. Bialkein bekabbalas ha'dibros Harishonos zachol kol Yisrael lahasaga bevchinas panim bepanim. It's baklaria meir. We saw Hashem perhaps better than any nation has ever seen Hashem before. V'nis amu etzlam hasagos anochi v'lo yelecha bebeir gamar mamash. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "I am Hashem," no one else ever had seen Hashem in that way, with the seeing sounds and the lightning and the thunder and the trembling and the clouds and the booming voice. When Hashem said, "I am Hashem," it wasn't, yeah, intellectually, I believe in the age of the universe and dinosaurs and science. It wasn't any of those philosophical discussions. They saw Hashem. It wasn't an intellectual argument. It wasn't a proof based on tradition. They were experiencing it right then and there. Hashem said, "I am Hashem." And they said, "We know." It's like, here's this apple. I know. What are my proofs that the apple exists? That I'm holding the apple. You give me an apple, if it's tangible, if it's palpable, then the existence of the apple is not something I have to prove to myself or believe in blind faith. This is it. I'm holding it. This is the reality of what it is. And the same is true for all the other dibros. Many have pointed out, this is our top 10. Asaras HaDibros. You're expecting some very lofty ideals. Don't murder. Keep your hands to yourself. Don't kidnap anybody. Don't take your friend's wife or the friend's car. That's the extent of our big 10. All nations have these rules. All nations have codes against murder and theft and kidnapping and coveting. The answer is that these weren't just beliefs. They lived in existence where Lo Tirtzach was not just a moral. It was a reality. In this moment, it was a reality. Turn to the next page. After the dots, the second paragraph. He writes, Nemsa Shigam Achar Matan Torah Tzrichim Anu La'asos Kabbalas HaTorah Bavodaseinu U'Bechiraseinu Anu. We have to be able to accept upon ourselves that reality, where it's not just a belief, it's real, it's a fact. And he writes, Mashal Ma'adavar Doma, he gives an analogy. Adam Bari Harotzeh Le'achal Holeich V'notel Es HaMachal V'yochel. A person who's healthy, who wants to eat, has the strength to pick up a fork and eat, pick up the fruit and eat it. Mishu Chalasho Katan. A person who is weak, or a young baby, who can't feed himself, they need to be fed by someone else to pick up the spoon, and for the baby, here comes the airplane, they need someone else. The best someone else can do is to have them put the food in your mouth. But to actually ingest the food, and we'll put IVs away for now, but just the idea of eating food. Eating food can be assisted based on how sick a person is or how underqualified a person is. The other person can help give. The giving can be done in little bursts or in a gigantic way, but at the end of the day, the actual swallowing, the actual internalization must be done by the person himself, by the person herself. And this, Ilan, brings us back to the question about Kaf Aleim Har Kegigas. Which one is it? Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu force the Torah on us, or did we say Nasa V'Nishman? Many answers to that question, how do you reconcile the forcing and the voluntary nature of it? Rav Dessler would probably say, but they're both true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu impressed upon us the reality. You can't live without this. It was clear to them, maybe it's a mashal, as if the mountain was hanging over their heads. They saw with such clarity what no one had ever seen before. How could you not accept the Torah when God is right in front of you? When God is hanging the mountain over your heads, you don't have a choice. God is literally spoon-feeding you belief. He's putting it into your mouths. So the question is, who needs Nasa V'Nishma? The answer is, with all the matana in the world, there still must be a Kabbalah. Kadosh Baruch Hu can do 98%, 99%. You can bring a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You can put the food in the mouth, but the baby has to swallow. Because sometimes the baby spits it out all over my shirt. I know. I'm familiar with this. You can't force the kid to swallow. HaKadosh Baruch Hu held the mountain over our heads. It was so obvious to us in that moment, this is Maral's approach, that it was so obvious, it was as if we were forced. How can we say no? God is staring us in the face. It was forced. But we still need Nasa V'Nishma, because we have to live our lives in a way where we're the ones actually internalizing it. There's only so much a matana can do. The zman matan Torah Seinu only can go so far. The gift is there. We have to swallow. We have to internalize it. We have to be the ones to actually bring it in. We have to be the ones to actually bring it in. Because if we don't, then it's not possible for us ever to live that way. The Matan Torah and the Kabbalah Satorah are not the same thing. That was not the case back then. And every year as we pass through the same time period, it's a question we have to ask ourselves. As forced as we feel, as obligated as we feel, that's the opportunity, that's the Matan, that's the giving. But where's the Kabbalah? What are we going to do to bring it into our lives? And with this, I want to raise a practical suggestion of what it means. What does it mean to actually internalize? What does it mean to actually make it real? What does it mean to actually have a Kabbalah? There is a Gemara in Masechet Shabbos that uses the expression, Kavata Itim La Torah. Heard this phrase before? Kavaya Itim? Gemara talks about six questions a person's going to be asked at the end of their lives. That a person was really honest in business, right? And one of the questions that they're going to ask a person at the end of their lives is, Kavata Itim La Torah. The simple understanding of that phrase is,
did you set time
to learn every single day? Were you Kovei Itim? That phrase in Shaduchim comes from Nakamar, Kovei Itim. I heard this from Rabbi J.J. Schachter. I think he was quoting someone else, and I apologize to the original author of this Dvar Torah. But homiletically, Kavata Itim La Torah could also mean, were you Kovei Itim? Were you establishing your times to the Torah? Was the Torah something that was convenient? When you had time, you found a way to make it work? Or were you koveya your time around the Torah? Did you live with this recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so real, that the Torah is so real, that the light permeates everything, that we're letting into our hearts, we're having a Kabbalah, so it feels real everywhere, to the point that everything else has to be worked around the Torah? Is the Torah something that we can just fit in when possible? Or is it the first priority? Stephen Covey has a lot of books on self-help. And one of them is called First Things First, about time management. I started reading the book, but I didn't have time to finish it. So I never got a chance to really get to the end of the book. But in First Things First, the first suggestion in First Things First is, first things first. People who have trouble getting everything done, the question is, where do your priorities lie? Do first things first. First establish the things that are be-all, end-all, that could not be dropped, and then everything else will fit in. And if something falls by the wayside, okay, at least it wasn't your top priority. How does it happen that our davening and our learning sometimes fall by the wayside? That our chesed and our time for our families fall by the wayside? How can those be disposable? How can the Torah and its values and its mitzvahs be disposable? If it fits in our lives, convenient, great. If not, no. Torah governs our lives. The Torah is our opportunity to have it be a reality. First things first. Work everything else around the kovei itim for Torah, the kovei itim for davening, the kovei itim for chesed, the kovei itim to be introspective on midos. That's where it has to be. Does the Torah have a sense of changing our reality? One of my rabbeim, Rabbi Yosef Nussbacher from Shalavim, pointed out that there's a common custom to eat dairy on Shavuos. Common custom we have to eat dairy on Shavuos. People have this minhag to eat dairy on Shavuos? It's complicated. The origin of the minhag actually comes from the Ramah, who talks about having meat and also dairy and then meat, to force ourselves to have two different sets of bread, as a zecher for the Shtei Halachem, which was the special carbon of breads offered on Shavuos, and he was talking about having dairy in addition to meat. Okay, that's not typically how it's done.
How about neither?
Vegan. Okay, some people are vegans out there. Gotta think about that. But the Mishnah Berurah quotes another reason why we have dairy on Shavuos. This is what the kids are taught in school. The kids are taught in school that when we finished getting the Torah, we had the laws of kashrus. And all of a sudden we had the laws of shechita, and all of a sudden we had the laws of kashrus, and the people said we haven't been eating kosher all this time. Our pots and our pans and our knives are not kosher. We can't do shechita now with these knives or eat with and cook with these pots that we have. So they had to eat dairy. Nebuch, they had to have dairy because they couldn't have the kalim. We're all treif. That's the reason to eat dairy on Shavuos? To commemorate our ignorance? We didn't know the laws of kosher beforehand. Then we got the Torah, and then we realized, oops, all our stuff is treif. So to remember that time where all our stuff was treif, we have dairy on Shavuos. What does that even mean? Rabbi Nussbacher explained that it's actually something very, very powerful. We are remembering the ways in which Kabbalah Satorah changed our lives. It changed reality. It wasn't treif before Kabbalah Satorah, because they weren't commanded about eating kosher beforehand. Avram kept the Torah, very nice. Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim were not commanded to keep kosher. They got mitzvos and mara, paraduma, kibbutz ave'im, Shabbos. They were not commanded to eat kosher. When they were eating not kosher, when they were not shechting, when they had pots and pans that were not kosher, that was fine. And then Kabbalah Satara happened, and the entire reality changed. Their pots were no good, their pans were no good, their knives were no good, their taste buds were no good. Everything flipped. Their whole lives changed because the Torah established a new reality. It wasn't just an intellectual belief. The Kabbalah HaTorah meant that their lives had changed forever, in many ways, food being one of them. What we remember on Shavuos as we eat dairy is that Kabbalah HaTorah was a permeating aspect that changed everything about our lives. The world was not the same. They tell a story that Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, was one time waiting to exit a shul, and he couldn't leave. He was standing there almost stone stiff. And he waited and he waited, and they couldn't figure out why he wasn't leaving. And later they found out that there was a person who was davening by the door, davening Shmona Esrei, and Moshe Feinstein wouldn't walk in front of him, because the halacha is you're not supposed to walk in front of someone who's davening Shmona Esrei. And they pointed out to Rav Moshe that, you know, maybe in halacha, I thought it says that if someone chooses a public space, they don't have the right to block off everyone's space. Maybe that person can't inconvenience us. Why was Rav Moshe so strict not to pass in front of the person who was blocking the door? Rav Moshe said, I know what you're talking about. There was a wall in front of me. I couldn't go. They said, what wall? It's the wall of the Shechina. For him, the reality of someone davening and the halacha of not passing in front of someone wasn't a question of, can we be mekel here, mekel there? Is it? That was a reality. It changed his reality. The halacha said that there was a wall there, he couldn't walk there. He physically couldn't walk there. It wasn't a choice for him. He was mekabel the Torah in a way that it became Anochi Hashem Elokecha. The Shechina is there. Kavata itin la Torah means what's going to come first? What's going to be our reality? What's going to be immutable? What's going to be the givens? And what's going to be fitting around something else? Rabbi Arya Leibowitz from North Woodmere, I've heard him tell the story several times, that someone in a shul was making a bar mitzvah celebration for his son. And they were celebrating that they had finished all six tractates, all six siddurim of Mishnayos. They finished Shas for the kids' bar mitzvah. And there was someone else in the shul who was very envious. He said, I wish I had time to learn Mishnayos from my kids. I just don't have a free moment in my day. I'm so busy, I don't have even a moment to learn Mishnah with my kids. Rabbi Leibowitz said, this guy hasn't missed a Ranger home game in 7 years. He hasn't missed a Ranger home game in 7 years. But that was immutable. Nothing to talk about. Given the time I have left, there isn't time for my family. Come home, they're sleeping already. What am I going to do Mishnayos? On Shabbos, I have to have my nap. And I have to have my party with my friends, my barbecues on Sunday evenings. Okay, first things first. What's going to be koveya? What's going to be kavua? And what's going to have to fit around everything else? Rabbi Galler has pointed this out, and I think it's a good hour to think about. Sometimes shailas come up about, I have this flight, and it's Purim, and I don't know what to do about Megillah reading, or this coming up, and it's Tisha B'Av, I'm not sure how to work this around. Sometimes things are unavoidable. But sometimes we're just not looking at the calendar. Purim happens every year. So are we going to fit our lives around our work schedules and say, well, if I have to hear Megillah at the wrong time, then so be it. Or are we going to say, Purim is Purim. No work, I can't go traveling on that day. Oh, but how are you going to, I'll work it out. Are we going to choose to say Megillah should work itself out? Or are we going to choose to say this business trip will work itself out? Not every case is the same. Not every person is the same. It's not a one-size-fits-all. But as a concept, are we living our lives being koveya the time to the Torah, or being koveya the Torah to the time? Are we fitting the Torah in around our Ranger games, around our schedules? Or are we living life with the reality that the Torah is permeating every aspect? This Kabbalah Torah is such an important aspect to think about, because the Matan Torah is there. It's there with boundless light. It could apply to everywhere where we let Hashem in. The question is, where are we going to do it? How far are we going to extend it? How far are we going to let Hashem in? How far are we going to allow Him to permeate our hearts? What do you think about this? Comments, questions, thoughts? We're all stunned. It's a different perspective on Kabbalah Satara.
I still really follow the Kafalim HaKikigas explanation, though.
Yeah.
Experience that exponential light volition with that. You're saying you can't take part good, then it really is kind of forced.
So to recap that explanation, the Maharal's explanation was that it's not that Hashem literally said to them, I'm going to kill you if you don't take it. It's that the reality of Hashem's existence being so clear was the equivalent of Hashem saying to them, this is right in front of you. You have to take this or else there's nothing to live for. How can you live ignoring this reality? And even with that Matan Torah, there still had to be a Nasa V'Nishma, because you can force someone, you can put it in their mouth, you can force them all the way with, this is the clearest day, this is good for you. But if they don't choose to swallow it, they don't choose to accept it, they could spit it out. And if they don't accept it, then it's not being internalized. Yeah.
Did the Gemara also say that because the world was predicated upon the Jews accepting the Torah, that he had to be called the Harkadikis to show that you'll do it by choice, but you should know that it really is compulsory in the sense that there's nothing without it.
I'll repeat that for those on Zoom who weren't able to hear. The other aspect of the Maral, because I'll say this by Yom HaShishi, right, the hay of the HaShishi of creation, is that the world was created on condition that B'nai Yisrael were going to accept the Torah on the sixth day of Sivan, and if they didn't, the world would cease to exist. And Maharal's understanding is that the forcing, quote-unquote, the force of being given the Torah, of taking the Torah, is the fact that the world can't exist without it. I think that's very much in line with what we're saying right now. That the world, the light on the giver's end, by Hashem's perspective, this is the world, this is the universe. It's everywhere, it's fundamental, it allows Hashem's existence to exist everywhere. If we choose to ignore that, and we don't choose to live our lives with that Nasa V'Nishma, you can have all the Kafalim Harkigigas that you want. It's force, it's a reality, it's built into nature, it's Kovei'itim, it's the reality as it is. But if we're choosing to close our eyes, to blacken the windows, to not swallow what we're being fed, then as forced as it is, as true as it is, as undeniable as it is, we're not taking it in. Does that address what you were?
Yeah.
Right? That there has to be both. There's a reality of Hashem's giving means that it's true, it's immutable, it's built into nature, but there still has to be a Kabbalah. The Matana is not enough if there's no recipient, or returns to sender, and it's almost like we're saying, I don't want this.
But why the threat? Why the Sham Yek Tzvuratchem?
The Maharal's understanding would be that it wasn't a threat in the sense of, I'm going to hurt you. It was, you have to understand that the world only can exist, you can only live if you're going to live life in this way. Hashem is almost not real to us if we're not going to be accepting of Him. So in that homiletic sense, the whole thing is a medrash anyway. So the whole thing is going to be understood homiletically. The homiletic understanding is that you can't live Sham Tehe Kvuraskan. You cannot live in the real world without having this perspective. If you don't, it's almost like you're not alive. You're not living with Hashem. It's Lo Tirtzach. You're not living with Hashem if you don't have this perspective. And it could be as forced as it wants, but if we're not going to say Nasa V'Nishma every single year, that something is being lost.
So then, going back to the sequence of events, shouldn't it have been that B'nai Yisrael, before they ran back and told Moshe Rabbeinu, go up to, you know, be our representative because we can't stand here, it's too powerful for us, shouldn't they have said Nasa V'Nishma right then and there? Why is there the delay between Parshat Yitro to Parshat Mishpatim?
There's a machlokes.
They said, by the way, Naaseh. They said they would do.
There is Naaseh in Yisrael.
Yeah. But that's actually before the lightning and the thunder and everything starts.
Okay. But standing betachta Sahara is a pasuk that actually comes even before that. Right? So the reference to Kafalim Harkagigas actually comes even before. Right? And the reality is that machlokes Rashi and the Ramban about when did Naaseh V'Nishma happen? Are the events in Mishpatim really taking place after at a later time, or according to Rashi, Ein Mukta Mabukhar Torah applies over here, that those events being described later were actually transpiring all the way in the beginning, and the Torah chose to write it in a non-sequential way for various reasons. But this is the idea what we're trying to internalize. This is the idea.
And then the question is, why did they have to say Naaseh V'Nishma, and why wasn't just the Naaseh good enough?
Good. So that's a good question about what exactly Nishma is really adding over there. There's a beautiful Beis Halevi that we don't have time for tonight, but to think about what does it mean, Nasa V'Nishma. But just to wrap up for tonight, our takeaway is thinking about what it means. Right? We raised the question in the beginning, what's the difference between Matan Torah and Kabbalah Satorah? Are we in the time of Matan Torah, or are we in the time of Kabbalah Satorah? And the answer is yes. The answer is that built into nature, built into the Itim, built into reality, it's Zman Matan Torah Seinu. And we say that in davening, and we say it in benching, because that's all that's a given. not as a mazkaret, not as a commemoration of what once was. It is on Shavuos, and now in the weeks leading up to it, it is Zman Matan Torah Seinu, that is unchangeable. What's up to us, what we have a choice to choose how much to relate to, is how much we choose to be mekabel. Which windows are we going to clean? Which parts of our heart are we going to open up? Which parts of our lives are we going to let Hashem in? Because the giving is there, and it's built into nature, and Shem Teik V'raschem, we can't live without it. It's forced. That's the reality. We have to ask ourselves, in which areas do we choose to allow Hashem in? As Rav Dessler said, when it comes to things that are available in the store, the store is open. The store is open for business. The supply is fully stocked. Do we have money? Are we going to make the effort to get to the store? Are we going to expend the effort and energy that it takes to be Makabel the Torah? To open a Sefer? To work on taking on something new? A new learning initiative? Whether it's Mishnayos or Gemara or Chumash or Navi or Halacha or Agada or anything. It's up to us. That's the currency. That's what it costs. Just because the store is selling doesn't mean the person feels full. It's a decision on part of the customer to choose to be Makabel and to choose to ingest. To think about our lives, Kovei Itim HaTorah, can we be Kavata Itim HaTorah, make Torah first things first, and have everything else work around it? To have everything else that we're busy juggling and not have Torah or davening or chesed or our families fall by the wayside, but to ask, how can we prioritize this first? How can we truly have Kabbalah Sad Torah? So, Mirtzah Hashem, if we take this to heart and use this last weekend change to fully prepare ourselves to use that the Or Chaim said, the end of the Zion Nikiyam, the end of this purification process, to allow ourselves to open our hearts more, to overcome the last stages of Tumah, and to allow ourselves to come close to that embrace with Hashem, may we turn this time of Matan Torah into Kabbalah Sad Torah.